It's everything Queensland footy.
Good bold football from the Brisbane Lions.
That's a big one for the Suns.
This is Triple M Footy's Northern Exposure.
Yes, indeed it is, the home of AFL in Queensland. Triple M Footy's Northern Exposure. And in the aftermath of Q Clash 22, and it went the way as the last six have as well. The Lions too good for the Suns, notching up a 52-point win on Sunday. My name's Nick Davis. I'm joined, as always, by Jack Fulham, who was front and centre for the contest. Jack, I'll get to you in a second. Will Ralston down in Melbourne. Yeah, boys, just keep getting it done. But it was probably their best performance of the season.
Yeah, that's what I think. It was a performance that we should have delivered, and we did. It was probably the most comfortable game, other than the North Melbourne one, obviously. But it just felt like, even when Gold Coast pegged a couple back, we were never really in any doubt. I think both clubs would be relatively happy, which is a good result for Queensland footy. But the Suns would still obviously be disappointed. But they're showing signs, and Brisbane got the job done.
It's one of those games on the weekend where you read the final score, you look on your AFL app and go, oh, geez, the Suns got belted, 59 goals. In actual fact, it was a very competitive game for long stretches of it, but the Lions are just too clinical.
I'd say the Suns really missed a trick. At 4-10 at halftime is probably where they get hurt. They were ahead at scoring shots then. Of course, Lincoln McCarthy in game number 100. We didn't get a touch on that last week, but I thought he was special. And there was this wonderful piece of play in the first term that almost just summarised Lincoln's career. Just fumbling, sort of throwing it along, but never gave up on the contest. Won the footy in a hard challenge against Tuke Miller. Got the ball forward. Lions kick their opener for the day. So a wonderful afternoon for Lincoln McCarthy. But Zach Bailey. Oh. Let's just talk about our man, Zach Bailey. Will, I know you love him, but 6 goals, the equal most in a Q clash. He was incredible.
The king. Yeah. He is currently 5th on the Coleman, as we were just discussing before. So he's just one out of the box. And I think opposition fans and the media alike are starting to come around on just how good this kid is, because he's going to be the best player at this club within a very short period of time. And he's in the conversation already. Obviously, you'd probably prefer to take Charlie Cameron at this stage of their respective careers. And Lachie Neale is arguably in Brownlow form. But in terms of just his ability to turn it on, some of those goals came from nothing. He just manufactured them from midair.
On a slippery day at Metricon and the breeze was swirling around, it were not tricky conditions to play in. He looked like he was the only bloke out there playing in the dry. It was incredible. Yeah.
This is the thing I wanted to get to, because first of all, this may be an off observation, but Zach Bailey's poise is what really sets him apart from so many others in the game. And I don't know if it's a Northern Territory thing, but I see shades of a Jared Brennan or even a Darryl White there. He's so light on his feet. And this may be the nuffiest stat I've ever presented on this podcast, but I took out the stopwatch for all of Zach Bailey's goals. All of them came from play on. The amount of time that Bailey was in possession for all 6 of those goals, 7.2 seconds.
What, in total?
In total.
Oh, that's a very good stat. Yeah. You told me this was going to be a junk stat.
We don't really look at this, but the reaction time for Bailey with ball in hand, many of these from...
That deserves a social time.
Oh, I love it.
From the time he took possession...
Yes.
To kick the ball, he kicked 6 goals in 7.2 seconds.
And I included the first goal where he fumbled a couple of times as in possession of the ball. So Rudy at Stats Department, if you're listening, let's tile this one up. But that just showed a couple of them were under a second reaction time from first grab to onto the boot, and including that one early in the third term where you didn't even know he had it by the time the ball went through the sticks. He is an incredible player, and this has to be a wake-up call to the rest of the competition, also to the fans around the nation. If he's not in your fantasy or super coach team, I don't know what you're doing with yourself.
As far as half forwards, like genuine half forwards that push up and can play some time in the midfield, go in the AFL, there's Zach Bailey and Toby Green, and then there's the length of the Flemington straight to the next one.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's the thing. He had 17 touches, which it's not what you expect from a guy who's kicked 6 goals. So you'd think he'd be camped inside forward 50. 11 of them contested as well. So he's just a very skilled unit who is so important to us. And it's nice to see that he's starting to get those big numbers on the board. And I think he's starting to get a bit of attention. And his performance, if you would let me just delve deep for a moment.
Go
and
for it.
Flatter myself with my stats work as well. This is a look back on the 2017/18 off-season for the Brisbane Lions, and I think it's really built what has become one of the most important in our history. So we lost Josh Shackey and received picks 25 and 40. We lost Tom Rockliffe and received a compensation pick in the first round, which was generous, but we'll take it. We sent 20 and 25 to Richmond in return for 15 and 52. Those two players that we got end up being Zach Bailey and Jack Payne. For pick 12 that we sent to get Charlie Cameron, Adelaide used Darcy Fogarty to select using their pick 12.
Take the win.
Pick 43, we received Luke Hodge and we traded out the equivalent of James Warple. And then in the draft itself, we got Cam Rayner, Zach Bailey at 15, as I said. 18, which was the Tom Rockliffe pick, became Brandon Starcevich, Toby Wooler, Connor Ballenden, and Jack Payne. And that also includes Charlie Cameron and Luke Hodge into the club.
What a haul. I want to go even like a year back and compare 2016-17 drafts of the Lions and the Suns.
We're going deep up.
Wow.
So 2016 and 2017, these are the blokes that came in through the draft and the rookie list to the Lions. McCluggage, Jared Berry, Oscar McInerney, Cam Rayner, Zach Bailey, Brandon Starcevich, and Jack Payne. These are the ones that are still on the list. That is pretty much the nucleus of a side for the next 10 years.
Yep.
Especially in the middle. That's 60% of their starting midfield. Have a look at the Suns in the same period.
Okay.
With arguably better draft picks.
Yep.
Ben Ainsworth still hasn't really broken out as an AFL football.
Yep.
Like, you keep waiting for him. Jack Scrimshaw, no longer playing at the club. Will Brody is a star this year. Yeah, at Freo.
Yeah, about that.
Jack Bowes, who's going to turn into a good footballer, but
yep.
I don't think he's going to be a star at this point. And then from 2017, you got Will Power, who probably will be a star, Charlie Ballard, solid, and Nick Holman. When you compare those two draft crops, the Lions are light years ahead.
Yeah, well, obviously in terms of retention, that it goes a long way. But I think they've done okay out of that couple of years, the Suns. We've just happened to have one out of the box because, as we said, we've brought in through the draft and then through trades with mature players, we've brought in just a wonderful football side who I am now very hopeful is going to go a long way. And this weekend is our first genuine test because, interesting stat, neither Brisbane or Melbourne have defeated a top eight side to this point in the season. So I think form is still a little bit interesting.
We touched on it earlier in the podcast. Zach Bailey kicked 6 goals straight.
Yeah.
Joey kicked 3-1. Charlie kicked 4 straight. They kicked 21 goals 6, which is massive.
In slippery conditions as well.
In slippery conditions. The Lions this year, 15-7 against Essendon, 23-18 against North. Well, they just belted them. They had shots for days. 11-4 against Geelong. Last week against Collingwood was 15-8 and then 21-6 on the weekend. Accuracy was once the Achilles heel of this side in front of goal. We saw them blow a couple finals, especially that 2019 qualifying final against Richmond.
My God.
Through accuracy.
Sorry, Stoltz.
I know it's only six rounds into the season, but it seems like it's fixed.
I was going to absolutely agree with you there, Jack, but I'll still play devil's advocate saying they still need to do it in a final.
Yep.
It's true.
I looked as soon as I saw the 21-6, I thought, great, yep, we have solved this. But until the Lions do this in a final, it's not fixed. Now, moving on to this weekend's game. First of all, can I point out, for two sides that featured in semi-finals last year to be playing in the graveyard slot of 4:40 on a Sunday afternoon, I don't know what's going on down at AFL House, but this fixture is all over the shop. But I will say, this will be an incredible challenge for the Brisbane Lions because, one, have not traditionally played very well on the SCG, and Sydney on their day are incredibly dangerous and play their home ground very well.
Yeah, I think we saw on the weekend when they were caught napping by Hawthorn, and then when they are given a challenge, that's when they really thrive. And I think the Demons are a little bit like that as well. Whereas I'm not sure we love stepping up to a massive eyeballs contest where we're expected to put up a fight. I think we prefer a bit of a medium-sized kill. So we've got Sydney,
who's a front-running operation.
That's what I'm worried about. Every time I hope that we're going to take a big scalp, I'm underwhelmed. We saw that over the last couple of years playing Melbourne and Geelong, teams we typically struggle against. And so Sydney, we've had a good recent record over, but we saw them struggle against North Melbourne, but then put up a very good performance against Geelong. They're on their day, as you said, one of the best sides in the competition. So this is our first genuine test. I think people consider this a fight between the second and third seeds in the AFL this season. And we'll see what people think after it because, I don't know, I've got a little bit of concern.
There is one area of concern, I think, for the Lions.
Hit me.
Dane Zorko.
The future All-Australian halfback flank?
Based on his performance against the Suns, and I've seen it a couple of times, especially that first match against Port Adelaide, albeit he didn't look like he was right.
Was that because there was a fracas of Tuke Miller? Please tell me that happened.
There wasn't a fracas with Tuke Miller. But the Suns sent Nick Holman to Dane Zorko for pretty much the whole match to go and run around with him. Kept Zorko to 13 touches, and Nick Holman burned him for 3 goals the other way.
He did.
And I feel like Dane Zorko playing off halfback is the solution to a problem the Lions never had. And I feel like if a team puts effort into Zorko and sends a Nick Holman to just go and shadow him for the whole game, that I feel like Dane Zorko could be a defensive liability. Like we saw in the finals last year, we saw Keziah Pickett get a hold of the Lions. We saw Bailey Smith absolutely, you know, tear that back six to shreds in that game against the Dogs, and he was the difference.
It's an interesting point you raise because
I feel like his performance down back so far is an asterisk. I don't think it's going to stand up to bigger tests.
We should get to the Gold Coast Suns because this is a podcast about two teams.
Yep.
I will say Connor Budrick's return to the side was very impressive.
Good footy story.
It is. After an ACL injury knocked him out 12 months ago, he slotted straight back into that side, and his impact was very obvious on the makeup of the Suns. So that's something, it's a real positive that they can build off.
Absolutely. Until he tore his ACL last year, he looked like he was going to take a step up into being maybe not a premier small lockdown defender in the comp, but a very good one. And he didn't look like he'd missed a trick. And playing against that Lions forward line where you've got...
You're up against it.
Yeah. There's a lot of weapons down there. So I feel like collectively the Suns back six were well beaten, apart from one man who I want to shine a light on, because I feel like, and this is a concept or a phrase that I'd love to enter the lexicon, is paying the Pavlich tax. And Sam,
I feel like I've heard this. Go
Sam
on.
Collins pays the Pavlich tax.
Oh, it was you that said it. That's right.
So much is that he's so unappreciated outside of basically the Gold Coast Football Club and our podcast. and the worst thing was that Joe Danaher kicked 3 goals on him and Sam Collins plastic bagged him for pretty much the whole match.
12 intercepts.
He's so good at reading the boot off the ball. Probably one of the best intercept markers.
I think you'll find it's ball off the boot, but...
Carry on.
Yeah, and particularly when you consider that first goal of Danaher's was that arsey one that he just sort of snapped when he was lying on his back in the first 10 seconds.
Taking one of the great bounce.
Yeah, I felt sorry for Collins immediately. He doesn't deserve
that.
So I feel like Sam Collins just is criminally underrated. He gets no love in the press down south. And it's a problem that Matthew Pavlich, despite being one of the best players in the competition for the majority of his career, just never really got the props he deserved.
All right, our new job on this podcast is Sam Collins awareness. We'll hold a 10K fun run, something like that, just to really get that name out there and put it before other people. So if you can start tweeting, hashtag Sam Collins, that would be lovely from the Triple M footy family.
But dead set, the Suns might have Sam Collins, but they have a lot of problems to go along with it. They could be 2-7 in 3 weeks' time. Because they have the Pies, the Swans, and the Dockers, all top 8 teams that are going along a lot better than they are at the moment. And for as good as their start to the season has been, they could be 2-7, and it almost doesn't seem fair.
Well, this is unfortunately what we've become too used to. A quick out-of-the-blocks start, but then it's going to be when the screws start to turn, the Suns really need to galvanise as a unit. And look, I wouldn't call the weekend a blowout. That was probably, by the time it finished, an average margin. They still put 80 on the board, which is bang on average for how the Suns have been playing so far, and that's not a bad thing. But the opportunity, especially in the next 3 weeks, has to be taken against the Pies. They won this fixture down in Melbourne last year. You're hoping Collingwood are coming off an Anzac Day sort of hangover. But look, I'm not imagining a massive crowd down there at the G either. But really, this has to be one of those games that we know the Suns can ambush aside. They need to bounce back from this Q clash. I wouldn't rule them out at all, but you're right. There's a lot of areas that do need to be fixed.
It's also that thing with the Suns is that, say the worst happens and they lose their next 5 matches and they're 2-9 when they hit the turn. You're just going to have to look at Stewie Jew and go, what's the next move here? Because this can't keep happening every year. It's the saddest thing.
And deep down, we all know it. So everything is on the line. But I won't blow up too much, but this is the opportunity the Suns have to strike. 1 p.m. Sunday afternoon at the MCG, Collingwood versus the Gold Coast. Again, AFL House, get your fixturing sorted. But this is where it can happen. Will Ralston, Jack Fulham, thanks again for joining us on Triple M Footy's Northern Exposure. We're right behind you, Suns.